What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
I'm glad you played that I'm a winner, I know how to win clip, because I have become, over the length of this show, the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate, 6 till 10, every single weekday morning. I have become fascinated, great one, fascinated with Jim Harbaugh. I knew he was... as the older generation says, a weird bird is an expression I've heard many times. I knew he was a
weird
bird.
What older generation says that? Like, generation?
Maybe even older than you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've never heard that before.
I've heard the expression a weird bird, and Jim Harbaugh is a weird bird.
It's a social circle thing, and we know I'm sheltered.
So. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, you guys would have called him something very different. Jim Harbaugh is a weird bird. And I heard a story, I'm going to play it for you later, that was told on another radio station after a conversation with some NFL executives about Jim Harbaugh that I'm fascinated by. Suffice to say, the cold-blooded competitiveness of Jim Harbaugh, turns out it's actually hilarious. And it involves a racquetball, funny enough. So we're going to get to that later in the
show. Listen, you cannot play racquetball uncompetitively.
No, I don't think you can. I don't think you can.
And it needs to be...
Do you ever have a racquetball period?
No, but I played racquetball in college. I discovered it in college, and it was full contact. I mean, maybe you played it with finesse. We did not. I mean, so if I'm coming across and you're coming across, you're probably going to eat some concrete.
See, I had a racquetball era when I was finishing up my college degree at the University of West Florida. Go Argos!
I think it's very college, dude. I just, at least it was for me back in the 80s. It was very college, dude.
Without a doubt. It was very college, dude. We had a set of racquetball courts.
By the way, real quick, no racquetball courts in the hood. It's just not really.
You all know Lonzo Street AF?
Listen, you say that. I should take you to my neighborhood sometime.
No, I'm good. Okay. You've told me the stories. All right. I'm straight. Appreciate you. We had racquetball courts in the gym. On campus in Pensacola, Florida, at the University of West Florida, my alumni, Go Argos. Shout out to the A50. And for about 2 years, I had a run where I had early classes, and then I had late afternoon classes, and had a couple of hours to kill in the middle. And I would kill that time playing racquetball. There was a group of us that kind of naturally formed. None of us friends anymore. Because racquetball will ruin relationships. Racquetball will straight up, and I get the assumption, because racquetball, I think, was it for a hot minute, mainly because, like, you needed a racquetball court, but if you had ambition anything could be turned, like any room could be turned into a racquetball court if you had the chutzpah and the right equipment. And now that world has kind of been taken over by pickleball.
And, you know, people may go, well, that ball is made of rubber. That won't hurt. Oh, yes, it will.
It's that, because that thing, if you get a couple of athletes in there, the ball will get trucking, son. The ball will get hauling. And if they're, you know, if you get somebody that you have trapped into playing from the back of the room and they're hitting that thing forward and you come between them and the wall, that thing will smoke you for sure. I had a couple of bruises here and there. There was a group of us that played. None of us stayed friends very long because the competitive juices get flowing in the racquetball world. There is a story out from Jim Harbaugh. You know what? What the hell? Who cares? We're supposed to start off with a topic in segment one. And this is, in the grand scheme of things, moving into Super Bowl weekend. This is not all that important, but it is hilarious. The Jags just fired general manager Trent Baalke, and apparently did so because Trent Baalke has a little bit of a... an attitude when it comes to his relationships around a football team. In fact, there have been a lot of folks down in Jacksonville that have said, including a couple to me, that the only reason Trent Baalke stayed on board as long as he did with his team is that Shad Khan is probably overly divested from the football team, like not nearly as involved in the relationships with the front office of the football team as he needs to be, right? Like finding that balance between Gail Benson and Jerry Jones is a tough one to strike.
He's really running the team.
I mean, he's running the team, but he was just doing it very poorly and from a distance. So Trent Baalke was.
Sounds like a certain wrestling organization.
Just, to some degree.
Just saying.
There's a
that's
big part.
That's why I'm saying who's running the team.
That's a big part of the reason that I will admit that as much as I want them to succeed and be very good, I haven't watched nearly as much AEW the past couple of months because it just feels like it's kind of an organization that divested itself too far from the product. Anyway, Trent Baalke used to work out in San Francisco, California at the same time that Jim Harbaugh did. And apparently their relationship fell apart due to racquetball. This according to 98.5 The Sports Hub.
So he Connor Stallioned him.
Jim Harbaugh got whooped in a racquetball game against his general manager. Jim Harbaugh put a camera into the racquetball court,
cheating,
filmed the game,
cheating,
sent the tape to a professional racquetballer and said, "Bud, I need an edge," and had a professional racquetballer analyze, break down the game, send Jim Harbaugh back a list of advantages that he could take against Trent Baalke in his game. Harbaugh beat him one time and said, "That's it, cooked, I'm done, I'm out. No mas, I'm out of here." And at this point, the story drops off. Not in my head, it doesn't. In my head, Trent Baalke found out that Jim Harbaugh hooked up a CCTV inside of the racquetball courts at the facility and got real heated about it. Got real heated. "Oh, you couldn't beat me straight up. You couldn't beat me on your own. So you're bringing in analysts. You're bringing in experts. You're going all CSI Miami on me figure it out."
Why are you glossing over the legality of this? You're not allowed to... record someone without them knowing, right?
If you are in a public space, you absolutely are. There is no right to privacy in a public area. Now, whether or not an NFL facility is overall considered a public area, and more importantly, whether or not you sign a contract that says you are fine with being under supervision inside the facility,
also,
I don't know.
Where was this at?
My understanding is it was in the 49ers facility.
Okay, so 49ers.
Yeah,
okay. Okay.
This was in San Francisco when they worked together.
All right, because I don't think he said that at the beginning. That helps.
This was when they worked together in San Francisco.
It's because I'm picturing him doing it in someone else's facility. That's why. So, I mean.
This was when Harbaugh was the head coach of the 49ers back in the day, and Trent Baalke was the GM. And the story goes that Harbaugh put a camera in the racquetball courts in order to gain a competitive advantage over Trent Baalke because he was breaking down that he couldn't beat him.
Also, how could a coach have that done in the facility and the GM not know about it?
I mean,
I'm just
GM has control over the contracts. A coach has control over everything in the facility.
Okay, I just thought everything. In the hierarchy, I thought a GM was above a coach.
Technically, yes, but not definitively yes. And when it comes to anything connected to the football team, that is facilities management, what goes where, how it's set up, head coach is in charge of all that. And most head coaches, in my experience, in my conversations, most head coaches get very anal about what goes where. About how things are set up and done in the facility. They have, it's not just, you hear coaches like, coach wants to build a culture. Coach wants to build a culture. For a coach, being able to control and manipulate every little aspect of what happens in the facility is a big part of that. So Jim taking advantage of that to rig up a CCTV in the racquetball facility so he could get one over on the GM, I find freaking hilarious.
See, I find it telling. And this has nothing to do with my bias. I find it telling that he's willing to go to any lengths to win. And he had no idea Connor Stallions was doing any of that. I didn't know. Oh, I'm going to the NFL, by the way, but I didn't know. I had no clue. I'm just saying.
You know what? When you started that take, Lonzo, I'm not gonna lie. I'm gonna no cap, keep it a buck with you. Because I'm young and cool and hip. When you started that take, I was a little ready to jump on you. I was like, you just hate Jim Harbaugh so much you can't even enjoy a fun story about racquetball surveillance. And then you got to the last part there, and I'm like, you know what? I'm jumping in on this. I am following you down that rabbit hole. I was ready to jump you for not being able to just enjoy a fun, humorous little story. And by the time you were done with that take, I was like, subscribe. I would like to subscribe to that theory. I am now all in on Harbaugh knew Stallions was doing what he's doing because if you're the cat that is going to install, rig up, and run a CCTV on a racquetball court so you can get one over on an employee, you are absolutely the type of cat that's going to send some GA on the road against no-name opponents in order to get some tape on big-time opponents. I would like to fully subscribe to what Lonzo just said, all right? I don't have any problem pushing back against Zoe when Zoe has a take that I don't like. That's kind of the hallmark of the show, is that the two of us have takes we don't like and we push back. This one, I'm all in. Fire it up, all afterburner, all gas, no brakes, full send. This is the nail in the coffin. Jim Harbaugh definitely cheated. Definitely cheated at Michigan. If he was willing to go through this level of law and order SVU surveillance in order to win a meaningless racquetball game between him and a fellow high-ranking employee, he was willing to go through all that to win that game. Jim Harbaugh is absolutely the type of cat that would send Connor Stallions on the road to get some tape and give himself an advantage in a game. I think Zoe wins segment one is what I'm getting out of that. All right, we got a lot we got to get to on the radio program today. So far, I have given you three of the six keys to winning Super Bowl licks down in New Orleans, Louisiana. I've given you a couple of them so far for the Kansas City Chiefs, one for the Eagles. Today, I will give you numbers four and five, another for Philly, another for KC. Tomorrow on the show, I will give you key number six to Super Bowl licks, whether Kansas City can get the three-peat. By the way, if you do get the three-peat, the four-peat's in play because Andy Reid said yesterday, I'm running it back next year, come hell or high water.
You did see about the trademark thing, right?
The trademark thing?
For three-peat.
Three-peat's already trademarked.
No, Pat Riley has given his permission.
For them to use it?
Yes.
Nice.
I think there's money involved, if I recall.
Yeah, of course there is.
Yes.
If money wasn't involved, he wouldn't have trademarked three-peat. Of course he did.
Well, since this whole thing's rigged, you'd think they would have already taken care of that. But you know,
I mean, what are you going to do? Pat Riley's got the trademark. Grabbed the trademark, a few decades ago.
No, I mean, you would think that the money would have already changed hands if it's rigged and they already know that Kansas City's going to win thanks to the referees. Then you go ahead and you make this deal with Pat Riley outside of the limelight.
You make that deal months ago, because the script's out. It becomes obvious. It's kind of like the movie. If you go out there and in, you know, November, you buy or you rent the three-peat trademark from Pat Riley, that's Chekhov's gun. You can't get away from Chekhov's gun. That's a flaw in movie writing and play acting. You can't do that. If you hang Chekhov's gun on the wall, the attention is brought to Chekhov's gun, and now everybody is looking and going, okay, we know it's getting used. Now we just got to figure out how. And if you trademark three-peat, that's kind of like when you have a character in a movie go, guys, I found some body armor, but it just covers up to here. It doesn't cover below my belly button. That guy's getting shot in the gut. You know it's coming. Or else he wouldn't have said that. It's a throwaway line. It's not a throwaway line. It's a big deal. If they had trademarked the three-peat back in November, then the script would have been out, and there's no more drama in the National Football League. You know? I don't know if Iron Man's going to be able to finish off Whiplash or not. I want to wait till the end of the movie to find out. I don't want to know midway through. There's nothing worse than sitting down to watch a movie and you get the ending telegraphed to you in Act Two. That's disappointing. All right. We're going to talk today, quite a bit of Super Bowl coming up later on in the radio broadcast. It is one of America's favorite things to do. It is time to look for all of the weird prop bets for the Super Bowl. We got into it yesterday with our first one, which was the national anthem length. What we said it was 2 minutes and 2 seconds, I believe.
I think it was 2:32.
Was it that long?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, whatever it is. We're going to talk about that. What color Gatorade is getting dumped? Can we pick out a trend on that? You can actually place a wager. And I will say, the odds I don't love, but I might be willing to take the long shot. Will Travis Kelce propose to Taylor Swift? It can be bet on.
Yeah, that's where did that come from? Just people are just deciding, oh, this would be a good time.
I mean,
I've seen it talked about and everything. Have there been any hints given or anything? I don't know. Just some people want to see that happen, and so they put it out there.
Oh, a lot of people want to see it happen.
Yeah, that's what
we call
I mean.
Those people Swifties.
Yeah,
I think there is the Travis Kelce. I think he addressed this yesterday, but the Travis Kelce retirement rumors have been floating around. The belief is if he's going to retire. Of course, he's going to retire to go follow Taylor Swift, the billionaire, around the country. That's a pretty good cushy life to be living. Does he want to follow his brother in the media? If New Heights becomes a TV show, it's going to be one of the most watched television sports shows out there. He's going to get paid probably more than it gets paid by the Chiefs to host it. Like, there's some thoughts out there. There's some rumors out there. So we'll do some weird props coming up later on in the show today. We'll get Denton Day in here later in the morning to talk about the Super Bowl. We'll talk a little basketball, too, as the continued fallout from the Luka Doncic trade spreads around the league. All that and more as we run through the fun and shenanigans for the four most electrifying hours of sports entertainment. It's the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There is a conspiracy theory brewing right now on the Dallas Mavericks trade of Luka Doncic to the Los Angeles Lakers regarding the ownership group of this team. There is a conspiracy theory brewing that is going to genuinely have an interesting impact on the NBA, on NBA fans, and it is a conspiracy theory that I can't really get my finger wrapped around for a few different reasons. I'm going to play you first a clip from, and I don't have any issues with the guy. He's just not my favorite in the game, Colin Coward. I'm not a fan. I'm not anti-Colin Coward. It's just kind of, he just kind of exists to me. But I think everybody in this business occasionally has a good take. Yes, even me. Occasionally a good take. Colin Coward was asked, or I guess was talking about, I don't think anybody really ever asked him anything. Colin Coward was asked to talk about the ownership group and how he thinks they were involved in this Luka trade. And he does have a little bit about Luka fitting in on the Lakers at the end, but here's his take. So, Colin Coward, talking about the trade itself, says that when the return was as low as it was, and that is a massive part of the reason that so many of us believe that there's something going on behind the scenes, right? There's something going on behind the scenes. There is a deeper reason for this trade. And the conspiracy theories about what is happening behind the scenes. In fact, I'm willing to go this far. I don't think they're conspiracy theories. I think they're just theories, right? Conspiracy theories have this connotation, or I guess by definition, are in response to people believing that someone is actively trying to pull the wool over your eyes, as the expression goes. Are actively utilizing some story to try to prevent you from knowing the actual truth. With this, I think we're just genuinely trying to find out the truth. Why did this trade go down? At face value, Nico Collins and the Dallas Mavericks, excuse me, not Nico Collins, he's not involved at all. Nico Harrison, the GM of, and the Dallas Mavericks, the team, are doing their darndest to try to convince you that they genuinely just believe that Anthony Davis is a player that is a better fit for and gives a better chance to the Dallas Mavericks to win an NBA championship. Which, does anybody believe that? Like, does anybody? I know there's a couple of NBA players that have podcasts now that are out there going, oh, yeah, you put him with Gifford, you put him the rest of these guys. And it's like, guys, they got two big men already. Daniel Gafford, they got big men already. Anthony Davis is a four without a one, and with Kyrie on the wing, isn't enough to get it done. Nobody that I can't accuse of being hot takey genuinely believes that the Dallas Mavericks genuinely believe that Anthony Davis gives them a better chance to win than Luka Doncic does. And then there's a conversation about Luka's fitness. Luka Doncic reportedly got up to 270 pounds. Now, I would like to remind people, because I think that a lot of folks that maybe don't watch a lot of NBA have this impression of, and because of the way he plays, it's a fair one to have. But have this impression of Luka Doncic as like this undersized point guard. Guys, he's a 6'6", I would say, power guard, right? He can drive to the basket, but he can handle the basketball. He's a 6'6 guard. 270 is definitely heavy for him to be an NBA player. I'm not disagreeing with that. But also, 270 coming off of an injury isn't super shocking to me. Now, if he wasn't taking the recovery seriously and all that, honestly, I think at this point, that would have gotten out. I feel like at this point, what was the actual justification if there was a reason? And that, by the way, would be a valid reason. Even Pelicans fans right now are like, trade Zion. He's not taking this seriously. Get something for him while you can get something for him. Because frankly, we all know Zion Williamson, not even as old as Luka Doncic. When Zion Williamson's in his bag and is in shape, he's one of the most dominant players in the NBA. But he just doesn't take it seriously. We had somebody that I trust very much from this area, from Spartanburg, a handful of days ago text and say that there are folks from this area that have gone down to see Zion in New Orleans and are kind of bummed out because he basically just like goes home and eats and plays video games, right? Now, I'm not saying I need him to have the Mamba mentality and live in the gym from 3 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day, but I've heard him described as somebody who just doesn't care. He's coasted on his natural abilities for so long that he doesn't know how to work when everybody else is more on par with you. And I understand that struggle. I told this story earlier in the week, too. High school was easy for me. I didn't have to study. I didn't have to work. And then when I got to college, I got my ass kicked the first 2 years because I didn't know how to study. I didn't know how to work. I didn't know how to grind to make sure I had good grades. And I tanked my first 2 years in college because of that. Tanked them. So I get it. It took me a while to figure out, to learn, as my old man used to say, to learn how to learn. Not what you were learning, but how to learn it. Took me a while. I get it. The conspiracy theory that's flying around, well, I'll let Chandler Parsons get into it. The he was talking about texting there was Mark Cuban, the former owner of the Mavs. Of course, he sold 70%+ of his ownership rights to the Dumont family and the Addison family. They are, as Micah Parsons pointed out there, Chandler Parsons pointed out there, they are Las Vegas real estate moguls that were heavily involved in the casinos out in Vegas, their development, establishment, etc. And so the conspiracy theory floating around right now, and I frankly don't know that it's like really all that much of a conspiracy theory, but the conspiracy theory that is floating around right now is that the Dumont family and the Addison family who bought the Mavs from Mark Cuban did so with the angle of moving them to Las Vegas. Las Vegas is the hottest sporting market in America right now. We have an MLB team that is on the way there. We have an NHL team that is already there and made a Stanley Cup run once they got there. We have a WNBA team there, and it has been, and an NFL team, obviously. And it has been no secret that the NBA is interested in joining its other leagues in Las Vegas. And so the belief was, oh, they did this in part because a team that had Luka Doncic and was genuinely a Larry O'Brien Award finals threat, the NBA wouldn't sign off on that move. But if they strip this team down and kill it off, it becomes a little easier to make that move. And if they do all that and already have all the connections, they're good. Except here's the thing. The Addisons and the Dumonts sold every interest they had in Las Vegas to generate the revenue to buy the Mavericks. They don't have any properties there right now, at least not that I was able to find yesterday. They don't have any properties. They don't have any casinos. They don't have any gyms. They don't have anywhere to put the Mavs unless they were to jump in and, like the A's are doing, build their own team, build their own place to host them.
Do they still have their connections, though? Just because you pulled out of everything from a place doesn't mean you don't still know all the people.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do. And I would be willing to bet that if they wanted to move the team, there would absolutely be a handful of magnates out there. Magnates? Very rich people with influence who would go, I'm in. Whatever I need to do. I want to be a part of this. So I could see this being legitimate. I could see this being real. At the same time, why would you want to make the basketball team worse before you up and move them to Las Vegas, Nevada? That it just doesn't play well with me. All right, we'll talk more about that later on in the show. When we come back, let's get into some Super Bowl licks. Rob Brown, the great with Lonzo, you. It's the Rob Brown Show. It's the Fan Upstate. Let's talk a little bit about the head coaches in the Super Bowl this year, because there are two coaches that are coming from very different places when we talk about Nick Sirianni of the Philadelphia Eagles, Andy Reid of the Kansas City Chiefs. So, by the way, if you missed this, we talked about it very briefly back in the first segment of the show, and we are going to get more into it later on in the show. Andy Reid has already said that he is coming back next year. He said, I love football. I love spending time with the guys. I'm coming back. And Clark Hunt, the CEO, the El Presidente of the Kansas City Chiefs, said, yeah, Andy's 100% going to let me be the first to know when he decides to step away. And he has not decided to step away, which I think is good if you're Kansas City. Andy Reid has been, I don't know, mildly successful as a head coach.
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, you know, he wins some.
Andy Reid, who spent, what did he spend in Philly? Like 14 seasons as the HC in Philly before he moved over to Kansas City in 2013, has been there ever since. Is working on a fistful of rings, has landed on and developed some of the best players at their position around the National Football League. It's been pretty good. And then there's Nick Sirianni. Nick Sirianni is one of two coaches this past offseason that I said, if you want to win a Super Bowl, you're going to have to move on from this guy. I blamed the collapse of last year's Philadelphia Eagles. A collapse that I think is, was, and should be considered one of the great second half collapses in the history of the National Football League. The Eagles were a Super Bowl front runner. And then just absolutely crashed out in the second half of the year. It was embarrassing. Like, it was real bad. They ended up losing 5 out of their last 6, including losses to the Cowboys, Seahawks, Giants and Cardinals. And I said, that's on coaching to me. That's on coaching to me. There are definitely spots where a team goes on an L streak and I go, the boys just aren't getting it done. It's on the guys wearing helmets and shoulder pads. And then there are spots like last year's Eagles where I said, it's on the coaching. But here's Nick Sirianni now going into his second Super Bowl in 3 years. Here's what's interesting. On one hand, I'm not overly blown away by Nick Sirianni. On the other hand, you could argue right now that Nick Sirianni has a better resume than Andy Reid at this point in Andy Reid's career. Reid's first head coaching job was with the Eagles. In his first 3 seasons, he made 1 NFC championship game. Sirianni's been with the Eagles 3 seasons. He's made the playoffs all 3 years. This will be his second Super Bowl appearance in those 3 years. What does it come down to when we talk about the philosophy of these two teams? What does it come down to when we talk about what we can expect coming out of the mouths of the guys wearing the most important headsets on the sideline? It is a different style of game. But I actually think there is one primary comparison that I would draw between Nick Sirianni and Andy Reid. Andy Reid, I think, has established himself over the years in Kansas City specifically. I think you could certainly say that this was, at least in some degree, partially true of his time in Philadelphia too. And Lonzo, if at any point I say something that you think is unfair or inaccurate about Andy Reid, let me know. But
wow, thanks for the yeah.
Okay. No, well, because I again, like, you know him better than I do, and I'm floating my philosophy, and I want to see if it lines up with what you as a Chiefs fan have experienced as reality. I think Andy Reid right now is the king of what I consider to be the most important thing, philosophy, style, that a head coach in the NFL can have. Fit your offense to the players. Don't try to make the players fit your offense. I think Andy Reid may be the most aware of what he has in the group of dudes that he has and the way to get the most out of said dudes by tinkering and tailoring his offense to his guys, not trying to demand that his guys tinker and tailor themselves to fit his offense.
You know, the other thing he does that I haven't heard of any other coach ever doing is he has a segment of practice, like once a week, I think it is, where the players come up with plays. And they just go out there and they have ideas and they run through the plays. And some of those plays actually make it on the field during the game. And what that does is that makes the players feel like, hey, we're really a part of this because we can come up with something and coach is listening to us and we get to actually go out and try this.
Regardless of how you feel about the Kansas City Chiefs with all the controversy, whether it deserves to be called controversy or not going around, I can say one thing is absolutely true about the Kansas City Chiefs, and I want to point out that this is the result of leadership from a guy like an Andy Reid, and it is not something that is easily replicated. It is very obvious, I think, when you watch this Chiefs team, whether you think it is good, bad, ugly, indifferent, the Chiefs have a locker room that I think every other team wishes that they had. The Chiefs have a relationship between Andy Reid and the players, between the players and the players, and between the players and everybody else in that building that I think NFL head coaches, when Andy Reid does retire and he goes on the book circuit writing about the Andy Reid way, I think head coaches for a very long time will be diving into every word Andy Reid has to say to figure out how in the hell do I replicate that? Because it's not easy. I think a lot of NFL locker rooms, I would even say most of them, have a vibe, right? But there is a different level. And you guys know I don't like talking about intangibles. I can't really break down what this means, if anything. I can't really tell you how many, if any, points that relationship in that locker room is worth for the Kansas City Chiefs in any given game. But what I do know is that if you are going to have a team that plays specifically offense the way the Kansas City Chiefs play offense, you've got to be on the same page, right? Like, sorry to go metaphorical because, again, hate talking about intangibles. But the chemistry has got to be there. It has got to be that mentality of, I know where these cats are going to be before these cats are there. I know where they're going to go before they know where they're going to go. That is part of what makes Mahomes' improvisation so damn tough to spot. It's not just that Mahomes has these fantastic moments where he can spin out of a tackle and run off to the right and then be falling forward and throw a pass while his whole body is parallel to the ground, falling forward and still complete it. The only reason he can complete that pass, aside from just a wealth of natural ability, is because he's aware of where Travis Kelce or Xavier Worthy or whoever's going to be. How quickly did Xavier Worthy find his groove in this offense? And a part of that is, yes, great locker room chemistry, great chemistry between the boys. But the other aspect of it is, go back and watch Chiefs games from like weeks 1 through 3 with Xavier Worthy. They were testing Xavier Worthy out in different roles in the offense. All right, are you a 9-route receiver? Are we a guy we're going to stick you out at the Y and say, hey, no matter what the play is, your job is to just put your head down and run that way as fast as possible and draw a defense? Is he an underneath guy? Is he a slant guy? And the reality is Xavier Worthy has kind of proven to be a little bit of all of that for the Chiefs. But I think his most valuable role in this offense has effectively become Tyreek Hill. Not in terms of run the 9 and Patrick's just going to wing it down there. There's not a lot of home run balls coming out of this offense. When I say Tyreek Hill, what I mean is a guy who has an understanding, a heightened understanding of where defense is trying to protect certain areas of the field and the ability to get through that area and onto a less protected area of the field faster than anybody realizes what he's doing. And Andy Reid schemes for him that way. Go watch any game when it becomes a screen or a toss or a jet sweep to Xavier Worthy. That is, it's drawn up by Andy Reid because it works. But there's another reason that Andy Reid calls those plays for Xavier Worthy. It is because he recognizes that at some point, defenses start to step up on Xavier Worthy. They start to get in his face because while he is very fast and he is very talented, he's not excellent at separating from a jam at the line of scrimmage. He's mediocre at that. So what happens is defenses start jamming him at the line. It takes him out of the play as a 9. Now the backside of the defense is a little more free to play without worrying about getting cooked over the top, taking the top off the defense, and Mahomes hitting a rocket shot down the line. So what do you have to do to bat that? I got to move Xavier Worthy. I got to put him in motion. I got to get him to different parts of the field. But I still have to make sure that they're just not passing him on to the next guy. And hey, wherever X ends up, whoever's closest, jam him. I'm getting in the ball. I'm making guys tail him across the formation. I'm getting in the ball into space in different areas so we can take advantage of that speed, even when they're doing the best they can to take it away from him. That's Andy Reid fitting his play calling to match his players. And that is something I think Nick Sirianni this year has done. This year has done. Now, there was a frustration when the Eagles' passing game maybe wasn't getting where A.J. Brown wanted it to be. But remember, they had that whole conversation about it. A.J. Brown vented his frustration out in the podcast world. And wouldn't you know it, the next couple of weeks, all of a sudden, the passing game started playing to A.J. Brown. Now, you can say he was placating the diva mentality of his number one wide receiver, and maybe he was. But I'm going to tell you, if you don't have that number one receiver, you ain't a Super Bowl team. I think Nick Sirianni has handled this season exceptionally well, and that's from a guy who was calling for him to lose his job after last year. Andy Reid's the better coach. No question marks asked. Better resume, more success, better players, better schemes. I don't disagree. What I am saying is I'm actually not counting Nick Sirianni out of being able to try to level that field a little bit. We'll find out. Water cooler cheat sheet when we come back. Top three sports stories you need to know. Super Bowl licks talk throughout the 7 o'clock hour. Denton Day joining us later in the show. Sports Flash now.
The Clemson basketball team, hours after being left outside of the top 25 in the AP poll, dropped an 89-86 overtime game against Georgia Tech last night. The Tigers were led by Chase Hunter's 28 points and Ian Shefflin's 23, but got just 10 points off of the bench. Tech out-rebounded the Tigers and were better from the field, shooting over 42% to Clemson's 36%. Falcons' former starting quarterback Kirk Cousins says that a lingering arm injury impacted his play and led to his benching midway through the season. Cousins said he took a hit in week 10 that injured his shoulder and elbow, after which the Falcons won just two more games and dropped a divisional lead. Cousins described his future as uncertain. Wonder if those were reported. I don't recall. Tune in tonight at 6:30 as the Furman Paladins take on the Western Carolina Catamounts. Furman versus Western Carolina, right here on The Fan, Upstate.